I'm Farah.
And this is She Smokes Too, a series highlighting women who love cigars.
Today we're smoking with Angela Yu from Grand Cathedral Cigars.
Hi.
She's a recent Tampa transplant and just an all-around awesome chick in the cigar industry. And who better to talk to than somebody who owns a cigar shop?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited.
This is so cool. I've seen this on YouTube before, so it's kind of cool to be here with you guys. And yeah. Especially now that I've lived here permanently. So,
well, this is our first interview in a while, but we think you're a good first one to start with. If you want to start by telling us a little bit about how you got into cigars, your journey to becoming a retail owner.
So I have been working with cigars for 12 years now, since I was 18 years old, and I just turned 30 not too long ago. So for me, it's really kind of been my lifetime. I mean, I know I'm not like a second or third or fourth generation cigar maker, but for me, since I was 18, that's what, like 40% of my life.
Right.
So that's pretty much all I've known other than going to school. And the cigar community has really become my family. There's some cigar makers that I've known since I was 18 and they've, you know, just seen me grow up, and some cigar reps in California, now they're retired. So I've really just grown up in this industry, and having, I think like most people who own brick and mortar cigar stores, they first are consumers and they smoke cigars and they enjoy the industry.
Yeah.
And then eventually they'll become a brick and mortar cigar shop owner. So I opened up my first store in 2018 in San Diego, which is called Lord Puffer, as you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
And Grand Cathedral just opened up January of this year. So it's officially 8 months old now.
Nice. Why? I don't think I know this story. Like, why did you decide to move to Tampa?
We never were looking for a place in Tampa.
Okay.
We always wanted to come to Florida. It was either Florida, Texas, Pennsylvania, Arizona. Those are all like low tax states for cigars.
Not California?
No. Our tax is like
California.
It goes between like 60% and 70%.
That's crazy.
You know, and it drops like 1%. They're like, wow, we just want to let you know that it went down 1%.
You're welcome.
I'm like, great, 1%. That's awesome. But we've been trying to get out of California for, I mean, years now. And I always told Nathan, we could open a cigar shop wherever we want.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it'll be exciting and we'll make the best of wherever we go.
Right.
But for me, it's not just opening a store.
Thank you.
For me, it's also like, we're going to live here.
Right.
So I'm going to make a life out of here.
Right.
So I don't want to move somewhere just for work and not enjoy where I live.
Be somewhere you want to be.
Yeah. Like the money could be great and all, but for me, I want to relocate here, move my mom here, my dog. So it has to be somewhere like where I can call home.
Yeah.
So I was never going to go to Texas, you know, Arizona's too dry, and Tampa, Florida, reminds me the most of California. You know, blue skies, water, everything is focused on like being outdoors.
Right.
So we just looked at a bunch of different zip codes, and I remember it was raining in San Diego, and Nathan said, here's like a list of 12 zip codes. Go find something online.
Uh-huh.
And we've always had a joke, which was, I would love to open a cigar shop either in a church or at a fire station.
Right.
And we found this cathedral, and I was just jokingly saying, like, how cool would it be to open a cigar shop there? But what are the chances that someone will let you open up a cigar shop inside
in a church?
So the very next day was a Monday. I left a message for Steven Schliemann, and he ended up calling me back, and he was like, hey, you know, my favorite cigars are Arturo Fuente Queen Bee. You know, the landlord, Lance, he loves cigars too. So everything just like fell into place. And then we got on a plane a week later and signed the lease.
Awesome.
So when you realized you were in Tampa and you can have a cigar shop.
Yeah.
In a cathedral.
This is like the greatest city to own, not even just a cigar shop, a business in general.
Yeah.
Because everyone is so supportive here. You know, the local law enforcement, the city officials, the different Heights communities, everyone is just so
supportive.
Yeah, especially of brick and mortar stores, which you don't see in California.
We were talking before you came about if there was a difference in the culture at your two stores.
Huge culture difference. I think mostly because in California, because cigars are so expensive, it's a certain demographics of people that smoke cigars.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't make a certain income bracket, it's really hard to go have a cigar every single day because it gets expensive, especially after drink cigar. In Tampa, I feel like it's just normal and it's a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice it because a lot of retailers that come to our store especially on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, one of the first things that they'll say is, wow, you guys have so many females that smoke cigars here. And we awesome. Get females that smoke cigars, not because their boyfriend smokes or because right. their husband smokes, like they'll go out on a Friday night, sit at the bar and just smoke by themselves. So that's one of the bigger differences that I've noticed. And then there's a lot of younger people here that smoke cigars because mm-hmm. I think they're family ties. I mean, we have people, one of the guys that work for us, I think his grandmother used to be a roller here.
If you talk to anyone who's lived in Tampa for multiple mm-hmm. generations, someone in their family
has a tie to it. Tie. Yeah. yeah. So it's really like a way of life here. It's yeah. not a hobby. It's just life here. So
I love that, you know, you say that there's like women there that mm-hmm. are just coming by themselves. Yeah. Because that's our experience. Mm-hmm. You know, we have so many women in our company. You're right. familiar with it. And so for us,
I think you guys have more females than males.
Yeah, I think so.
In the home
here.
Office, we do, for
yeah,
sure. Cause
yeah, because if you look at the J.C. Newman, your guys' like annual picture that you guys have on the front staircase, yeah. it's mostly females.
Women.
Yeah.
I know, it's funny.
And so we don't think anything of it, but then we go into smoke shops when we're working with our salesmen or visiting territories, and we're like aliens. They're like, yeah. what are these girls in here?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, and that's kind
especially
of.
Especially when you roll in, like, eight girls yeah. deep, you know?
Yeah. When we
like
do one of our girls'
night. Crew.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know. We have 8 or 10 girls who come in to a shop and start smoking. And
which
it definitely
we should actually
turns heads, that's for sure.
Talk about reviving that and switching it to Grand Cathedral.
Yeah. Come on by.
Yeah.
This weekend I had an engagement party.
Oh, really?
Which I thought was, well, you guys do weddings here too. So, like, you wouldn't see that outside of Tampa, I feel
yeah.
like. Like, a normal bride wouldn't say, hey, I want to go get married or have my engagement party at a cigar-themed place. But here it's just so common.
Yeah.
And it's not, like what you said, it's not like an alien thing or anything, mm-hmm. so. It's cool. I like it. I like being in Tampa.
And what's your experience been like being a woman in the cigar industry?
Kind of like what you just said, when you go to cigar shops, you don't think like, oh, I'm a female going to a cigar shop.
Right.
It's just what you do. So I've been working around cigars for so long, I don't really think anything of it,
mm-hmm.
just because I just feel like I'm another person that owns a cigar shop.
Yeah.
For me, I think the hardest thing, though, it's always I hear a lot of other people say like, oh, maybe she has her store because she's a female.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those things that they always fall back on.
Right.
But I want to say, well, I have a store because we're aggressive retailers and we're really passionate about this industry.
Right.
So I guess that's really more of it.
Do you ever feel like people don't think that you're the owner, that you're just
oh,
walking
yeah.
there?
I get that all the time.
That's
I get that. That's a common thing. I hear a bunch of different reasons or,
right.
you know, I'm just the face of it, mm-hmm. or and I don't have any involvement with the store, so there's a bunch of rumors out there.
Do you think Angela's just the face? You should have seen this girl with the plywood building the Grand Cathedral.
Yeah, we saw that place being built.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, a whiz to when people underestimate you, and mm-hmm. you're like, oh, you're just a woman in the shop, like you clearly
right.
aren't the owner. You get to kind of hear like people's honest feedbacks and opinions because
yeah.
they just don't think anything of you. Like we run into that at events.
Yeah.
Where we work events mm-hmm. and we're both marketing directors for the company, but they think that we're just like hired models.
Right.
Like, you know, like we're just
to show
we're just
up
hilarious.
And like bring people in.
Yeah. And,
and
they're like, and they'll be like, oh, are you really smoking that?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, yeah, what? Like it's not a prop. And,
yeah.
But it's just so funny the things that people
right.
feel like they can say to you when
right.
they think that you're just a model or something, you know, like
yeah,
not
no,
affiliated with the company.
It happens all the time. In our store particularly, like most of the females that work there, they're very strong, opinionated,
nice.
And they all smoke cigars and whatnot. So they can, I mean, our bar manager, Nicole, she smokes cigars regularly,
mm-hmm.
even at home.
Mm-hmm.
So she can hold her own cord and
mm-hmm.
she can school guys about cigars. So. And that's one thing. When we hire people, even if they just work in the bar, we want them to be educated in cigars. So
mm-hmm.
they're not just pouring drinks. They can at least have a conversation about tobacco and cigars and whatnot. So.
And I feel like if you work in the industry, even if you're not on the cigar side or
mm-hmm.
on the bar side, that you end up becoming part of the culture and you end up smoking just because it's
right.
really like intoxicating. It just kind of
yeah.
sucks you in and it becomes part of your life. So.
And it's a good like after time. It's,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
And they go hand in hand, right? Drinks
mm-hmm.
and cigars, socializing, and the community is so great. And one of the coolest things I find about cigars is no matter if you smoke cigars, no matter where you go, you're going to run into someone who you're connected to by like one degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whether you've worked with someone or you have friends who know someone, like everyone is connected because the community is so small.
Yeah.
And, you know, so few people, I think they say like, what, 1% of 1% smoke cigars. So the chances are when you walk into a cigar shop, you're going to run into
someone who knows someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Which is really cool because, you know, I used to travel a lot for work too. And I would always make it a point to go to a cigar shop because that's the one place where I didn't feel like that I was by myself or lonely. I could just pick up a conversation with someone. So.
Yeah, it's the great equalizer.
Yeah, that's what we always talk about at the office.
Yeah.
It's the great equalizer. You could be sitting next to a shift worker mm-hmm. and you could be like the CEO of a company and you'll find something to kind of relate over and bond over. And I think that it's what makes the interesting, the industry so interesting and so sticky. Like, you know, like people just kind of get stuck in it.
Yeah, right.
And because it's cool and there's so much passion and it's so.
But you do get like walks of life.
Yeah.
You know, every corner of the world, every job in the world,
every age,
demographic.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get every type of person, which is really neat.
Yeah. And I think you said earlier that you kind of grew up in the industry and Kara and I can relate because we're around the same age and we started right out of college and it's just kind of all we've ever known. So I couldn't imagine not working with cigars.
I know.
I can't imagine.
No.
Because it's not just work. It's fun. It's hobby. It's your friends.
It is.
You know.
And like people across manufacturers and smoke shops become friends.
Yeah.
And you build this community. It's so funny. Like, because we joke that like once you're in, you never leave. Like you just, if you leave a company, you go somewhere else. Maybe you go work for a shop or you work for another manufacturer, but like you'll see those people again. They'll be back. Well, before, I know, I feel like I've heard a couple stories about this, but before you lived in San Diego, before you had Lord Puffer, you lived in the Bahamas?
I lived in the Bahamas for like two and a half, three years.
What were you
doing
there?
I have a partner named Nathan, which you guys know him, and he has a green thumb. He's always had this dream to grow tobacco. So, and we met, this all happened at a cigar shop, right? Like we always say. He met a guy who knew a guy who owned a farm in the Bahamas called Abaco, and it was a citrus farm at the time, and he wanted to convert it into a different type of crop. So he gave Nathan the opportunity. He said, hey, I have this farm. If you guys want to move here, you guys can do whatever you want with it. So we said, sure, let's try and grow tobacco. And we got on a flight and we ended up living there for about 2.5-3 years growing tobacco. We also opened up a cigar shop while we were down there, right across from the Marsh Harbor Airport, which isn't there anymore after the hurricanes. It blew everything away. But we were growing tobacco down there for probably 2.5-3 years. The only problem, it grew great tobacco. The only problem is the labor is too high there. So minimum wage in the Bahamas is about $5-6 an hour. So you can't really compete.
Yeah.
With countries like the Dominican Republic or Nicaragua. And to get someone who operates machinery in the Bahamas or a skilled laborer, you're looking at $10, $11, $12 an hour. So it just wasn't sustainable, which is why we ended up coming back.
Some of the same issues that we run into in the States.
Yeah.
Just the high.
It's super, super expensive. And then on top of it, the taxation in the Bahamas is really high to get any type of products or fertilizer or drip tape or machinery. I mean, the
makes sense. You're on an island.
Yeah. It's, and then to get the stuff repaired, if anything breaks down, you're looking at months just to get a part. So
island time.
Yeah. It wasn't sustainable, but it was fun. It was one of those things where you don't get offered the opportunity to go live in the Bahamas. So for me, I was like, I'll take it.
Did you guys sell the tobacco to anybody or were you using it for yourselves or?
No, we never sold it to anyone. It was curing the whole time. So we never got to the selling stage, but we opened a store down there and it was fun. I got to do things I would have never had the opportunity to do. So
what's the hardest thing about growing tobacco in your experience?
Like
where did you really struggle outside of just like Bahamian struggles?
In the Bahamas, we just had no infrastructure. So I think the biggest struggle we ran into was setting up the infrastructure, irrigation, getting the raw resources out there. Because once you're there, you could find laborers if you're willing to pay for it.
Right.
But it was just getting the materials to the Bahamas itself was just really difficult. You know, to get drip tape, we had to come to the U.S., put it in a container, and then it would sit at customs for God knows how long. So the ability to find raw material was the hardest, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've been to the Dominican. Have you been to Nicaragua yet?
Yeah.
You've been to Nicaragua?
Yeah, I went like 3-4 times, something like that. Right. 3 times, 4
Have
times.
You been to Pensa yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I'll see you down to Pensa.
I haven't been there.
What preference, Dominican versus Nicaragua?
Ooh. Well, it depends.
Yeah. I feel like it's a tough question.
Because they're so different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Nicaragua is definitely more remote, mm-hmm. so you get really immersed within the local.
Yeah,
it's like that small town.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's so different versus the Dominican Republic. It's really, for me, it's like going to Mexico, right? Like another city.
Especially if you go with the Fuentes, because it's like the red carpets rolled out.
Yeah, like, there's like beautiful restaurants. Yeah. And I remember, I don't know, maybe like 2 trips ago, we went to this restaurant. It took like 2 hours to get there, but it was at the very top of the mountain, and it was like above the clouds.
I don't know.
No, it wasn't Camp David. Mm. It was, I don't remember the name of it, but it was, I thought we were like going to Mount Everest. Like you just keep on going and going and going. But at the top, it was beautiful. And there was this like outlook on the edge of the mountain. And it was just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
So it's so different, Nicaragua yeah. versus Dominican Republic. And then you have the beaches in, you know, Dominican Republic. You go to Puerto Plata, Blue Jack Tar.
Right.
The people just treat you so great there. Yeah. So. But then there's animals in Nicaragua. There's,
I know. Know,
horses on the side of the road.
Lots of cows.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I love them both.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the leather shops. True. I love the leather shops yes. in Nestle. That's always yeah. so fun to explore.
I have some good belts and handbags from mm-hmm. Nicaragua. Great leather, great steak.
But then you get authentic Italian food in the Dominican.
yeah.
From Paolo.
Exactly.
so. And just crazy Paolo in general.
And nothing compares to Chateau Fuente. That's like.
Oh my gosh. It's heaven on earth.
It is.
It's so same picturesque.
I know.
It's so like you can't believe it's real life, but it is real life there. And it's so, it's like something from a magazine.
It is.
It is.
It is. It just kind of appears out of nowhere.
Right.
Like you're in this rural area and then all of a sudden there's this like.
I think the most amazing thing are like the little details and, you know, that's yeah. Ciro and Carlito, but like every little thing, there's a meaning behind
there's
it.
There's a meaning.
Like if there's a hole, there's a meaning behind that hole.
That's or
if
intentional.
There's like a discolored window. There's a meaning behind mm-hmm. the discolored window.
Yeah.
So
it's like literally that's like Bobby Newman's big joke is like they literally paint the rocks. Like and where do you go?
Meaning.
They paint,
there's
right.
a meaning behind the rocks.
They paint
yeah.
rocks, you yeah. know? Or like the tips of the wood fence.
Right.
Like they paint the tips of that. And we always talk about that whenever we get to go to Chateau Fuente
uh-huh.
without fail. We're sitting in a rocking chair right. at the Hemingway house. We have a cigar, mm-hmm. we have a glass of wine. I'm like, wow, like this is our life right now. This is so cool.
Like, this is work. Like
yeah.
How lucky are we?
It's just beautiful and peaceful.
Have you guys ridden the horses?
No, I don't.
I have.
That's interesting.
Did you ride the horse?
You
rode the
horse.
Horse.
Yeah.
I don't do horses.
You don't like horses.
I don't want to get on anything that big with a brain. Okay, that's my rule. Like, and also, they don't listen to me. They can sense my fear. And they just like
so they
will
just
take
start going
me wherever they
and
want.
And you're so little, too, the horses.
And they'll be like, take control. Tell yeah. where to go. And I'm like, please take me.
I don't want to.
And then it like will take me back to the barn and sleep or something.
Yeah. I'm guessing you've ridden the horses.
Oh, yeah. Every time I go ride the horse.
Yeah.
Have you?
I rode the horse, yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
The first time I didn't know if I was allowed to, but there was a guy like, you know the
yeah,
guy that always
like,
walks the horse?
Yeah.
Can I ride the horse? So.
Yeah.
My first cigar, I remember it so clearly. First of all, I wanted to be cool because everyone was smoking cigars.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, I got to smoke a cigar like them.
So you're in the industry or before you got into the industry?
That's when I first started.
Okay.
So I was living in downtown and there was a cigar shop across the street from where I lived and it was the only place that I could go in underage because everything else is bars. So I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm going to hang out here every day. And
this is my spot.
Yeah, this was my spot. I camped out in the corner. I was one of those people, you know how every cigar shop has someone who camps out? I was a camper at the cigar shop. So
18-year-old Angela Yeo.
Yeah. And I remember everyone was going to the top of the Marriott. There's a cigar-friendly place called The Altitude. And I wanted to be cool because everyone was smoking cigars. So I just grabbed the first cigar that I saw, and it was a Rocky Patel Edge. And no one bothered to tell me that you have to take the footband off. And, like, I didn't even think about it. So
you smoked the footband?
I smoked the footband. It was a Rocky Patel Edge Sumatra. I remember it so clearly.
What did that taste like?
Well, it was burning a lot. And I was like, is this
because
going supposed to burn them this much? But I didn't know you're supposed to take, because no one else took their bands off because their bands were right at the top because they weren't smoking the edge. They were smoking, I don't know, like a Padron or something. So
no one helped you out? No one?
No, they like, alone? They, no, they like totally left me to sink. So
familiar.
That was my first cigar.
I'll tell you, it's my first cigar story.
That was my first cigar.
Did you like it? Or were you like, what?
Once you got past the paper.
Like, yeah, at first I didn't like it, but it was the only place that I could go to.
Yeah.
So I just like sucked it up and I was like, okay, I'm going
to
continue
smoking. It's like learning to like beer in college.
Yeah. You don't like your first beer. Like, no one can say they like their first
the
beer.
The kegs are all that's free. So you just got to suck it up and learn how to drink beer.
So I remember I was like, how do people do this? And I didn't really know what I was trying to taste. So I was like, well.
And no one like guided you through it?
No, I was just puffing just to puff. I was one of those puffers.
At least you weren't inhaling.
Is that how you got your name, Lord Puffer?
No, Lord Puffer was actually, Lord Puffer was our lawyer's vineyard's name. And it was always a joke. If we ever open up a cigar shop again, we were going to take his name, which is Lord Puffer. And then we opened up a cigar shop.
It's a great
we stole his name.
Is there anything more California than your lawyer owning a vineyard?
I know, and he's a huge cigar smoker too. So we're like the complete oxymoron of what it is to be California. So it's okay. But
I think you know when you've really gotten into cigars, if you work in the industry, when you start smoking on like personal time, and you get like the people in your life involved in cigars, and you only want to go places where you know you can smoke.
Right.
But that inevitably happens. Everyone. We had a girl start recently in our department, and she had never smoked before. And now I'm seeing like on her social media, she's at the beach with cigars, she's at the pool with cigars.
Is it Carissa? Yeah. That's amazing.
Oh, I remember when Carissa.
Yeah.
She came over for your birthday.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's just so funny to see how it, you know, slowly works its way into your.
But it grows on you. Yeah. It's one of those things that grows on
and
you.
And there's never pressure. Like, not here anyway. Like,
right.
When people come and they get hired, we're not like, you have to smoke cigars. But it's more like, you're going to be around it from time to time.
Right.
So you have to be able to tolerate that.
Right.
But we'll never pressure you. There's no expectation. Mm-hmm. And it really is. You're just around it and you're like,
you just pick
cool.
it up. Yeah.
Like, I want to.
But you feel no one puts pressure on you, but you feel pressure like being in the industry, like to at least try.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's just like that culture though. You're just like, it looks fun. Like
everyone's
like,
doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that looks like it goes great with that drink.
But you're right, having... no one pressures you. Mm-hmm. No one says like, oh, you have to smoke cigars.
Thank you, Angela, so much for coming and being, I guess, interviewed by us, but really just chatting.
Thank
friends.
You for having me. This is so cool.
I know. I feel like we should do this once a week. Because this was lovely.
This
was I know.
You guys can come over.
We need to come over.
We're right down the road. We're right down the road from you guys.
They sent us home again, so we'll be back.
We'll
you know what?
Well, actually, we should.
We'll come work.
What are we doing? What are we doing
and
at
we
home?
Have a huge patio, so you guys can social distance if you guys need to.
Yeah.
It's outside.
Yeah. It's so lovely. With koi. Yeah. Are your koi doing well? Are they also?
I love my koi. I have an obsession with my koi. I love them. My little goldfish, they're like huge right now. I just bought more fish. Then I have turtles. My goal for like next month, I've already like went on Pinterest and I found like different designs that I want. I want to make a turtle like drying area. Because my turtles, they need a place to like sunbathe. I have three turtles.
Oh,
a turtle drying area.
I want an area for them to like hang out in the sun. I don't really have a nice area for them.
Like a little turtle deck.
Yeah, so I need to build I'm telling you, that's what I want to do. I went on Pinterest and I saved like all these different turtle deck ideas, like turtle patios.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's absolutely what we're calling it, the turtle patio.
I have turtle patio designs I want to work on.
Are you going to have like mini Fuente umbrellas? Fuente patio umbrellas for the turtles?
Well, so my pond in San Diego and my fish tank in San Diego, I threw the Carlito bobblehead in there.
Stop.
So I thought it would be like a cute idea, but I didn't know the paint wasn't waterproof. So his face just started peeling off. I kid you not, but I didn't want to waste the bobblehead because his head, you know, it didn't break. It was just the color. So I used mascara to fix his eyebrows.
Stop. I need to see this. I need to see this,
Carlito. I don't think he knows this. I use like concealer to do his paint on his face
because
his whole face just like came out in the water. So I like repainted it on.
That
sounds
to get you a new one.
Horrifying.
I just didn't want to waste it.
It sounds terrifying. It's perfect for Halloween. It's coming up.
So I definitely use mascara to paint his hair, and it's kind of creepy, but it's okay.
Well, thank you for joining
on that
us. On that note, thanks for joining us. If you're in Tampa, if you live in Tampa, if you visit Tampa. Visit Angela at Grand Cathedral.
Come on, absolutely.
It's an amazing shop.
It is.
We love it.
Yep.
And thanks
cheers.
For
cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to good friendships
Thank
from the cigar
guys.
Industry. Bye.